everybody, and welcome to another edition of Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. I'm very excited about our topic today. Today, my guest is Dr. John Scheinberg, MD, who is not only a medical doctor, but he is a police officer. As a medical doctor, he practices as a cardiologist, and he's been conducting some very interesting research on the impacts of heart disease on the profession of law enforcement. So, John, welcome, and thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's fun to be here.
Would you tell us a little bit about your background? It's not very normal to find a cardiologist working as a cop, so maybe you ought to lay a little of the foundation for us.
Sure, absolutely. So, as a young man, I had two potential career pathways that interested me. One was being a police officer, and one was being a doctor. Well, in 1989, so 26 years ago, I had the chance to actually become a cop. So I worked in Massachusetts for a little while as a patrol officer and found my passion. And after doing it for a while, I decided, you know, I'm going to give medicine a shot. I was an EMT beforehand. So went to medical school, joined the military to pay for the medical school. I spent almost 15 years in the military as a cardiologist, as a flight surgeon, and as a as a team leader to a fire flow over critical care team during the early stages of Operation Enduring Freedom. I got out of the military in about 2004, set up civilian practice here in Austin, and after a few years of doing the civilian thing, I really missed sort of the camaraderie and some of the excitement of both the police world and then the military world. That kind of prompted me to get back into medicine. I'm sorry, get back into police work. I went to the School of Tactical Medicine and then eventually went back to the Police Academy and became relicensed as a Texas Peace Officer.
Wow. So when I say thank you for your service, it's kind of all-inclusive because you've really given a lot to your community and to our country. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
It's not often that somebody can actually fulfill two life dreams like that. So I think there may be a whole nother story there that we could get into later. But what I'd really like to hear about is some of the research you're just now reporting and publishing about the effects of heart disease in law enforcement. And I would love to hear from the horse's mouth what you're finding.
So it's actually quite interesting. There are, if I just may say, there's probably, at least in the state of Texas, there's maybe 8 to 10 physicians that are law enforcement officers, and throughout the country, there's a few dozen of us. The majority of my colleagues who do this are trauma surgeons or emergency medicine physicians. So I kind of come at this world from a little bit of a different angle, and I sort of never intended to look into this, but as I started looking into and learning about police officer mortality, the cardiovascular illness kept popping up. And I find myself in a relatively unique position to sort of make an impact. So I started seeing the data from the Officer Down Memorial page and from IACP about the number of deaths that are reported on duty every year. And if you look at that data, heart disease is usually the number 2 or 3 killer, depending on the month. The interesting thing about that reported data is its line of duty deaths. So if a heart attack were to happen, let's say shift ended at 6 p.m. and the heart attack happened at 7 or 8 p.m., that is not counted. So if you extrapolate to a 24-hour period, heart disease comes to the number one or number two slot of officer mortality. And interestingly, we're not really sure why. It's, you know, I have my own thought on this, which I'm going to in a little bit, but I think it's a perfect storm. It's a combination of a people who have a genetic proclivity for this choose law enforcement. It's a type A-driven profession. Mm-hmm. It's a sedentary profession, which many civilians don't realize. It's a sedentary profession with 97% boredom and 3% terror. It's a shift work position, and it's a diet of convenience. And I think all these things sort of manifest themselves that cops are just dying from heart attacks.
Yeah.
And having recently gone through the academy again, spend this inordinate amount of time on officer safety, anything from a threat to death policy to pursuit policy, and we have glossed over heart disease.
Yeah.
I found myself really in an interesting position. So I started taking some of the latest detection technology that we've been using, and I tried to apply it to our population. So what I've done is I've taken a group of officers, and we are about to hit 500 officers so far. We have about 400 some odd officers in a pilot study.
Wow.
And these officers were all volunteers. We have city police officers, county cops, some constables, some federal agents, and some DPS troopers. And these volunteers have agreed to go through three specific screening modalities. One is a old-fashioned exercise treadmill test. The second is a blood test, which is an advanced lipid panel. It looks not only at the amount of cholesterol, but at the quality of the cholesterol. That test also measures an inflammatory marker, which I'll get into in a moment. And they also underwent these ultra-fast CT scans of the chest, which they're called coronary calcium scores, and they look for the early flecks of calcium, which are deposited in the very early stages of heart blockages. So we have this population of volunteers who underwent this type of study. And what we found was very interesting. Now, if I just may kind of back up for a moment, we've known that cops, the mortality of cops, the chances of cops having heart disease is not new. We've known this for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
The initial studies that were published in the early 90s that really quantified this. And there's been some attempts in the past to detect it early. All those attempts have come up short. No real good, there's been no real good detection. So I took these three pieces of data, I ran the officers through them, and lo and behold, almost 57% of these young being 35, age 35 to 55 officers had evidence of blockages in their very early stages, which is more than the civilian population.
Wow. Frightening.
It was pretty eye-opening. And we've taken this pilot study, and we've actually just applied for a grant to take the study to more of a nationwide initiative. We've actually, the reason we actually had added the treadmill test to the detection process is most of the agencies that we've come in contact with, for example, Austin Police Department, when they have new hires or they have promotional physicals, their officers undergo stress tests, exercise treadmill tests with electrocardiographic monitoring. And that's been the standard. And we've shown that that test is relatively useless. It doesn't catch heart disease in its very early stages.
Yeah.
So as we move this forward to the next stage, we're actually going to be recommending from a screening perspective that police officers undergo blood tests looking for an inflammatory marker and coronary calcium support.
Hmm. Wow, it's kind of startling and critical that we're actually looking beyond. I think even when I was hired 38 years ago, originally, I think even then we did a treadmill stress test. And I've also heard from other sources that is not always a very good predictor of future coronary problems. So I'm thrilled that you're actually giving other recommendations to agencies. Is there any kind of pushback? How's it being received so far?
So that's a great question. If I may comment on a couple of your things. The treadmill tests are great tests. They're great tests, especially if you want to look at what we call functional capacity. So the ability for an officer to perform at a certain workload, in other words, walk on a treadmill for X amount of time, that is a mission-critical function. So there's a differentiation here between a physical fitness assessment and screening for heart disease. So I do believe that treadmill tests are indicated or the equivalent, which would be an agility course or a stationary rowing machine. Those tests are good, but unless a blockage is bad, we don't see it. The question regarding pushback, we found a couple of very interesting patterns when we did this. The first is there are essentially two groups of people when this type of testing is rolled out. There's one group of people that embrace it, and they're happy to participate, And then there's another group of people who are exceedingly resistant to it. They look at it as a infringement upon their rights or their ability to work. They try to block it with the union. They claim EEO disability. I have a disability with hypertension. I can't do this test.
Right.
So the way we've kind of gotten around it is we've made it a the tests have not been rolled out as you do this test or you receive a punitive consequence. Or you do this test and if it's bad, you're going to receive a punitive consequence. We've gone through a different route. We've actually gotten in with the police unions or in here in Texas with the associations. And we've basically got the associations to embrace what we're doing and roll it out as, hey, look what we can offer you. We can offer the ability to detect heart disease in its early stages, and we can do it as a no-cost benefit to the officers. And when it had that sort of spin on it, with the union support of it, it was very well received by the line officers.
Well, and I can certainly understand that. I think in law enforcement, traditionally, we're all frightened about anything that's going to take away our job and that, you know, might not, we might not score as well as we're expected to do. And I can understand that underlying fear, but I love the kind of preventative approach that really talks about taking care of the people and taking care of the officers and their health and wellness. And, you know, early detection seems like it would be a real important factor here that we might be able to mitigate. I suspect you're going to tell us we might be able to mitigate some of the damage that this could be causing if we find these things a little bit earlier. I mean, I just read, I think 2 weeks ago, a detective with the Washington State Patrol collapsed while working in the field, and he's only 47 years old. He died of a heart attack. And, you know, I think guys need to be a little bit more afraid of that. It's not the bad guys that are going to be killing us necessarily.
You're right. So some of the data is pretty shocking. It looks as an officer is 25 times more likely to suffer death or disability from a heart problem than to be injured by the violent action of a suspect. That's wow. The first issue. And the average age of a law enforcement officer with a heart attack is 49. If you look at the civilian sector, it's 67. And a wow. gentleman named John Violante published some very good mortality data. And this is all-cause mortality, but police officers have approximately a 22% reduction in mortality compared to their age-matched counterparts. So officer mortality is huge, and heart disease in that population is huge. The problem that we're seeing is it's just not a glamorous topic. And you know, we spend all our time on the build-out and development of these first aid kits, which we call IFACs now. We have these tactical combat casualty care programs, and they have all these great acronyms, and the officers get these great kits to put on their belts, and it's got a lot more glamour. The reality is going for a heart scan doesn't quite muster the same sort of, you know, bravado that we see in some of these other things. Yeah. But I argue, you know, if we're going to shoot for that below 100 target that we try to get for officer mortality,
yeah.
if we eliminate heart disease, we're there. And
yeah.
it's a very real possibility. So I've been practicing cardiology for 20 years, and I have, there's no question that if we assume a very aggressive early detection and prevention strategy, we can really reduce, if not eliminate, heart disease. It is a fixable, preventable problem. Mm-hmm. The problem that we've seen, not just in law enforcement, but in the civilian sector, is that people don't go to the dentist until they have a toothache. So there's no big push to take asymptomatic people and put them through a rigorous screening process. And that's across the board. That's not only in law enforcement.
Well, I mean, that's all well and good, but if the statistics hold true to the entire population, then it is the biggest killer, and we really ought to be doing something. So I would hope the statistics would drive some of that.
That's the goal, and that's my passion right now is to get the word out. The screening processes are simple. They're not very expensive, and they're effective. We run cost analysis on this. We've taken a look. There's something called the Medical Blue Book that looks at the cost of procedures. And if we assume a police department, but roughly 1,000 officers, which is a large department, but just keeping the numbers easy for computation. And we assume about a 60% cardiac detection rate. If you assume, even within that population, that 75% of those people are going to have a problem, and we've sort of abstractly assigned 25% of those to heart attack, 25% to a stent, and 25% to bypass, you look at approximately $28 to $30 million of treatment over a five-year period.
Wow.
If you assume a very aggressive preventative maintenance standpoint, and that even includes the testing, the scanning, and treatment for cholesterol and follow-up visits, we end up saving about $5,000 per officer per 5 years. There's the department money. It's money, most of the departments that we visit, training budgets are bare bones. There's not enough money to buy bullets.
Right.
There's not enough money to replace body armor. We have a hard enough time using seized funds to update vehicles, and we can improve financial performance of departments just by reducing mortality. We also keep officers on the street. So, after a bypass surgery, we typically have someone out for at least 60 to 90 days.
Hmm.
After a heart attack or a stent placement, those folks are out for at least a week or two. And during that time in an undermanned department, you have less officers on the street, you're increasing your overtime, you're increasing workload on the remaining officers. So the cost savings does not even include the amount of money the taxpayers have to pay for overtime.
Yeah. Oh.
So it's a win. Aggressive preventative stance is a win for the officer. It's a win for the department. It's a win for the taxpayers. So the cost of screening is far outweighed. So the benefit of screening is far outweighed by the cost.
Yeah. You convinced me. Well, in a minute, I'm going to ask you how officers and agencies can learn more, but let's talk about this from the individual officer's point of view. Is there anything that they can be doing just on their own, even if their agency doesn't support this kind of testing or prevention program? What can the individuals be doing to try to minimize some of this risk and maybe some of this damage?
Absolutely. So in order to kind of launch into that discussion, there's two simple concepts which I need to define. One is wellness, and then one is they overlap. So the one is wellness and one is screening. So from a cardiovascular wellness perspective, we talk about fitness, we talk about healthy lifestyle, the right diet, the right exercise program, not smoking, not excessive drinking. It's the things that we've been, beaten into our heads from our parents, down to our sergeants and whatnot. So there's a wellness program, but on top of a wellness program, there's a screening program, and they have to overlap. So an officer has to understand there is a need to be fit. There is a need to eat healthy. And our understanding of fitness and health is very different than it was just a few years ago. The diets that we now recommend are not low-fat diets. We found the low-fat diets actually create more problems than they help. So we recommend a diet which is most consistent with what we would consider, quote, paleo, unquote, diet. It's a diet of fresh fruits and vegetables and meat. We're less concerned about dietary fat now than we were years ago. We're much more concerned about carbohydrate consumption. So things like bread, rice, pasta, potatoes, juices, sodas, those problems create obesity, diabetes, and lead to heart disease. So from an individual officer standpoint, and again, this is old information, but the officers need to make sure that we're watching our weight, and especially in an environment where 80% of police officers are overweight.
Yeah.
The obesity rate for police officers is 40%, compared to the general population, which is about 32-33%. So weight management is key, exercise is key, but if all that is done, and here in Texas, there's going to be some legislative input to the departments which require fitness programs. So we're just getting into that. But once that's on board, the officers need to understand that just being a cop is a risk for heart disease. And in doing so, they need to be able to secure the screening that we found.
Okay.
So basically, the individual officers need to be able to go to their primary care physician or their cardiologist, and they need to ask two specific tests. One is a blood test with a marker called lipoprotein phospholipase A2, otherwise known as PLA2. The letter P is in Papa, Lima, Alpha, and the number 2, PLA2. This is an enzyme. This is a blood test that detects an enzyme that is a marker of inflammation. Mm-hmm. In other words, when blockages begin to form, those blockages irritate the blood vessel. In the same way that if you have a splinter under your skin, the splinter irritates the surrounding skin.
Okay.
That marker is a simple blood test. It's FDA approved. It's covered by the insurance companies. It's even covered by Medicare. And once Medicare covers something, it's considered standard of care.
Yeah.
And it's a very good predictor of increased cardiac risk. So if that number is elevated, the risk of heart attack and stroke are markedly increased over a five-year period. The first thing the officers need to do is need to track down a blood test called a PLA2.
Okay.
The second thing they need to do is they need to go obtain a coronary calcium score. This is a very quick scan of the chest. It's done on a CT scanner. It's low-dose radiation. It's what we would call about 1 or 2 millisieverts, so about two chest x-rays worth. It's done. The scan is marked under several different names. It's been marketed under Heart Saver CT scan, Ultra Fast CT, but it's basically a low dose radiation scan with no dye that looks for little flecks of calcium.
Okay.
That is a test that an officer can walk into a hospital and purchase. It does not require a physician's order. We looked at both of those tests independently of each other and together. And what we found is if you do one or the other, the predictive value is not great. They need to be done simultaneously. We find a group of officers, so the data that I've generated, approximately 39% of the officers had abnormalities with that enzyme test, 23% had abnormalities with the calcium score. But if you put them together, it's about 54-55%. We're closer to 57% on the most recent crunch numbers.
Wow.
But we find that these tests pick up two different groups of people. If either one of those tests are abnormal, that triggers an aggressive cholesterol reduction plan, which is lifestyle modification, some supplements, especially fish oil, because it's got a very potent anti-inflammatory property, as well as some medication if needed. So the officers need to go out and look for those tests.
Okay.
The way I actually went up to Fletchy and was asked to help to have them develop a curriculum that looks at this. And we kind of developed a three-pronged approach. The approach has to be, theoretically, it should be spearheaded by the agency, by the academy of that agency, and then finally the burden rests on the individual officer's shoulders. So if we have an academy that educates the officers in sort of a fitness and wellness program, and give them the tools to succeed in that regard. John, what we have found is a lot of, when you ask recently graduated cadets or newly minted officers, if they're expected to maintain firearm proficiency, 100% of the time they will tell you, yes, we're expected to qualify monthly, semi-annually, it's understood. But most of the departments, when they graduate their officers, the officers have no expectations for continued wellness or fitness. So the point is when these newly minted officers have graduated, they need to understand that fitness is something that they'll have to maintain. So we've got to instill that in them from a young rookie cadet role. The department has to spearhead this. The chiefs and the executive command section have to embody this. You can't have chiefs that are out of shape, overweight, smoking, and then expect the troops to follow suit. So the command leadership has to take an active role. And then ultimately, the officers need to know what they need to do. And if they work for a rather small department that doesn't have the resources or the ability to do this sort of thing, the officers have to be able to seek the right care on their own and know what they'll go out and ask for.
Wow, there's a lot of work to be done, but it sounds like it's absolutely critical, and I appreciate the fact that you're out there beating the drum as a very credible source about the importance of this information. So thank you. What else do we need to know? You know, you're suggesting maybe the officers could do this individually, and I'm assuming you're talking about that age range of about 35 to 55?
So, yeah, so initially we started looking at ages over, males over 40, women over the age of 45, simply because the current screening guidelines for calcium scores look at those ages. Interestingly, what we found are younger cops coming to us and sort of begging, hey, look, you know, my father had a heart attack early. I'm really worried. Is it possible for me to get in on the screening program? So we started to let everybody in, and we're finding the detection rate starts occurring at age 35. Mm-hmm. So we're saying at age 35 is really going to be, when we formalize the recommendations after completion of this pilot study, the recommendations will be male and female over the age of 45 undergo coronary calcium scoring and PLA2 measurement. One of the other impediments that we've had is the cost. So let me just talk a little bit about the cost of these tests.
Okay.
The calcium scores are not covered by insurance universally. They're a cash pay price. What we found is the actual cost of the test is about $47. It's $12 with technician time and electrodes.
Okay.
And we have radiologists overread the study to make sure there's no cancer or lung mass or anything like that. That's usually $35. So the actual test costs about $47. Some hospitals in the greater Austin area have agreed to do the test for cost for law enforcement, which is $50.
Wow.
Others don't. And the other, if you walked in off the street to some of the hospitals, the test runs anywhere from $99 to $190. Every once in a while, there's a special, for Heart Month, they discount it. So that's something the officers can get. It's a relatively reasonably priced test. We see in some of the agencies, the department picks up the cost. In one of the sheriff's departments locally, the union is picking up that cost. So it's typically $50 to $100 per person. The blood test is covered by insurance. What we've found are some of the labs are willing to take insurance only. So they're willing to draw the blood, bill the insurance, whatever the insurance pays, some of the labs are willing to take that. The out-of-pocket of that is very dependent upon the officer's insurance, what they are, the deductible. I mean, the healthcare, that's a whole other topic on what a mess our healthcare system is. But we've found ways to do it. So the correlate to this is we found that in some of the more rural towns where the obesity and diabetes rate is much higher, the incidence of heart disease and diabetes is much higher. So the smaller rural towns tend to have the biggest need. Unfortunately, the smaller rural towns have less resources.
Yeah.
They pay their officers less. The officers don't have the financial ability to go out and get these tests. And a lot of times the departments don't have the money to get tests. So to answer that need, a few of us decided to form a non-for-profit. And interestingly, it was originally formed as the Law Enforcement Cardiac Foundation. And after forming it, we realized that we basically cut off two-thirds of our funding sources.
Yeah.
So we rebranded it the Public Safety Cardiac Foundation. And eventually we're going to sort of rope in our firefighter and EMS brothers in this as well. But that foundation, which is newly formed, just received its non-for-profit certification or ACTS ID.
Uh-huh.
That non-profit has already applied for grant funding. It's going to seek donations in order to further the cause. And that funding will be able to go out and go to, that foundation will be able to go out, go to small rural departments and write a check to that department to cover the cost of the officer's screening.
Excellent. I'm curious.
But it's a work in progress. We're
Well, and also, what's the protocol? How often do they need to repeat this test, whether they have a positive or a negative result?
That's a great question as well. So we rely on sort of standardized screening technique, and that's been it's a five-year screen. So if we run someone through this and we identify coronary disease, that person automatically goes into a treatment arm. That person will be seen by his or her physician, seen by one of the cardiologists, and they'll be prescribed medication if needed, lifestyle recommendations, supplement recommendations, and whatnot. And that person is sort of brought into the system as a patient. If the officer has no evidence of plaque, no evidence of inflammatory heart disease, in other words, their numbers are beautiful, we recommend screening again in 5 years. With the caveat that these are asymptomatic screening guidelines. So if we have someone within that five-year period who would develop chest pain or difficulty breathing or passing out, then all bets are off. That's a different
entity. Right. Yeah. Okay.
But for someone who is active and symptom-free, we screen every 5 years.
Excellent. So what else do people need to know, and how can they find out more information?
So as a the question is, so the answer to that question is a very broad answer. My first recommendation is we're trying to get the word out, and it is trickling out. So the media, such as what we're doing today, is really the best way to get the message out. We have launched, the non-for-profit, the Public Safety Cardiac Foundation. That website is publicsafetyheart.org. The website was just built. The page is being created, which will have all the information on what an officer can do, where they need to go, what tests we recommend. We have I've been asked to sort of write some, interestingly, rework some chapters and some textbooks. The Texas Peace Officer Manual, which is a textbook that we use in the basic peace officer course, we're updating it. We're running into a bunch of, I don't want to say roadblocks, but a lot of inertia, because we're finding the licensing questions, which tie to the test, have to be changed as well. So if we change the test, we have to change the objectives, which leads to changes in the question. So if we change the textbook now, people will get the test questions wrong, because the test questions for licensing exam, the old information. But we're trying to get the word out in publication form, textbooks, through web information, and through sites like yourself.
Excellent. Well, and I will pledge to you right now, we'll do anything we can to promote and continue promoting this information. So by all means, we'll stay in touch with you. We'll publish a link to publicsafetyheart.org. And we will support you in any way we can, because this is important information. I think it's very startling information, and I think we really need to get it out quickly in order to really try to turn the tide. Otherwise, I'm not sure what the future is going to hold for our profession if we've already got 57% of people flagging on this. So that's a little frightening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If I can really close with sort of just one concept again, just to reiterate, you know, when we go to show up, we sit in the show up room and we look at the board that every day is updated for the number of line of duty deaths. And we have right next to that board the below 100 sign of what our goal is. I truly believe that those are reasonable goals, especially if we eliminate heart disease. And it is rampant, but it is fixable. If we detect it early, we can prevent the downstream complications. We just have to make sure we get the word out, and we motivate sort of these young officers who feel relatively invincible. But you know what? These things, despite eating well, despite PT, despite doing everything we possibly can, being a police officer is in and of itself a risk for heart disease.
Yeah. Wow. Well, as you said, health and wellness, just like our shooting skills and other proficiencies, need to be part of a lifetime commitment, not just a hiring commitment. And you're going a long way to really reiterating why that's so critical. And sadly, many people are finding out way late in their lives, and we need to get the word not only to those people to maybe turn things around, but to the younger officers out there that might be able to do much more to prevent this in the long run.
Absolutely.
Dr. John Scheinberg, I want to thank you very much for not only what you're doing for COPS, but certainly in the research to promoting wellness and health for the law enforcement professional as a whole. Thank you for being our guest. We will continue to publish information about this, and we will support you in any way we can. I commend you for your efforts and really appreciate your commitment to your community and our profession.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to do so.
I want to thank everybody for listening. You can learn more about this research and these proposals with the links included in this article. I want to thank you for listening and encourage you to tune in next time for another edition of COPSA Live Audio Bulletin. This is John Marks. Stay safe and stay well.